I'm James Alcohol. And I'm currently taking a public speaking class, and they told me before you speak not to drink a lot of coffee and not to picture everyone naked and not to drink before I speak, so I'm doing pretty good, 2 out of 3. Yeah. So I'm just going to hold this up like this. Okay. Cool. My sobriety day is June 18th, 2008. I have a sponsor, and I'm available to sponsor others. And, you know, before the meeting, I was sitting around reading some things that Bill Wilson, they quoted him at. And one of them was, to the world, you may be one person, but to that one person, you may be the world. And I think back to my sobriety, and I have a lot of people in my sobriety that mean the world to me. I have more than one person. That's through the gifts of this program. I'm supposed to talk about what it's like, what happened, and what it's like now. And, you know, we all made it here, so I'm going to keep it brief about what it was like. So just to start off, I grew up in a very, very loving family. Part of the Boy Scouts, I did achieve the rank of Eagle Scout. And just was very involved in my community, my church, everything like that. And I had a little bit of alcohol interaction at a young age. But I remember when I first had my first mint julep at the Kentucky Derby, I knew I wanted another one. And then New Year's, I wanted another glass, and I couldn't wait till I could go out and eventually just like be fit out on my own and drink on my own. And at the age of 15, I did what everything like normal kid does. They just take everything out of the cabinet and mix it all together, and they go, "Wow, I guess this is it." And it tasted like crap. And but one thing I do remember is I was on my bed throwing up all over the place, and I thought I was like the rock star man, because I remember that's how a lot of rock stars died, you know. And that fear of like, wow, I almost died, lasted until the next week till I could do it again. And you know, that's generally how my drinking went. Age of 18, I was arrested. At 18, I had a lot of stuff happen, and that's what I want to talk about right now. If you ever heard my story before, I was out in Hawaii, 18, hanging out with a bunch of dudes that were Samoans, and everything was pretty cool, man. They were selling drugs. I was hanging out with them. I felt like we fit in together. And yeah, so everything's going great until we start walking toward the beach, and they start speaking Samoan, and that's when I knew I was going to get robbed. And and I was like, damn, man, I was doing pretty good. And so then they threw me against the corner. It was these three dudes, and I remember they're hitting my face, and I'm sitting there, and they're just wailing on me. And the whole entire time, it was like, just yell out for help. You know, I had that pride that was so high that I could not even yell out, help! You know what I mean? I couldn't even do that. You know, I stood there as I saw people walk by and didn't see me in this alleyway getting my ass kicked. And, you know, fast forward to another situation, down in Tijuana, Mexico. Shit. If you've heard my story, you've heard it. So I go down to this strip club, and first time ever to one, and I was 18, drinking age was 18. I was drinking Dollar Dos Equis. I thought I had arrived in Tijuana. I was like El Captain, and so I'm just down there. I'm drinking. I'm eating quesadillas, and so I wind up in this strip club, and there's only one girl, and there's a bunch of dudes, and they all work there. And it was just a really weird scenario, and it wasn't like The Sopranos, and I was like, this isn't like the movies. And so it was just awkward, man. They had a like, carrier, and they sat her down on me. And then they're translating for her, and I'm like, I just need to get out of here. That's the best decision, is to leave. And so I go to leave, and the best way to describe this is if you've ever seen the movie A Bronx Tale, where the bikers roll in that Italian bar, and they go, now you can't leave. And they close it. And this guy goes, you can't leave. You didn't give me a tip. I said, I had opened the door when I came in here, and I had opened the door when I'm leaving. And he's like, well, you didn't give me a tip. And I was like, let me leave. And he's like, no. I said, I'm an American citizen. He said, I'm a Mexican citizen. I said, and so I'm like, once again, how can I get myself out of this? You know, pride is through the roof. How can I get out of here? And constant reliance upon self, you know? And he must have had a change of heart, and he let me go. And I proceeded to get detained by immigration or whoever's at the border patrol. I got detained by border patrol for trying to cross the border with stuff that they said I couldn't cross with. And in front of my mom, I haven't tried to go across the border yet, so I find out what happens whenever I do. But they took my information down and they confiscated what I had. And the whole entire time, the reason why I tell those stories isn't to say like how crazy or how wild, it's to show you that I relied upon self. And when I came into the program Alcoholics Anonymous, they told me if I didn't rely upon others and ask others for help, that I wouldn't make it. And that's why I mentioned those things. And so I came in June 18th, 2008. I have prior AA experience. I'm not a first-time winner, but I'm here to tell you if you're here, stay here. You know what I mean? The program Alcoholics Anonymous is here, and there are plenty of people here to help you that are armed with the solution, the facts of the big book, as they're laid out in the 12 steps. That's what we're here for, you know, primary purpose. And so I came in, and I was willing, absolutely to a T willing. Went to treatment. I'm an advocate. If you're in treatment, stay in treatment, and then when you come out here, come to AA. And I went to treatment and got out, and I got a bed available in Upper Darby, Pennsylvania. And I had nothing, man. I really had nothing. I came into treatment with a switchblade, and that was it. And, you know, so I a long way from up, you know? And I remember when I was in there, man, people used to bring me cigarettes. My buddies used to bring me cards and cigarettes. I had a buddy bring me a prepaid cell phone, and they gave me all my buddy's cell phone numbers. And these people used to visit me. And at the time, I had an active PFA, which is a protection from abuse that my mom had against me, you know, because of my drinking. You know, I know where my drinking takes me. And I had to go to court because of that, you know, because of my actions from my past. And you know, I didn't want to face my stuff. You know, they said, you got to go to court. I said, don't let them know I'm here. It's HIPAA law, you know. And, you know, I went to court and mom crying, you know. And so I basically told her, don't contact me. I can't contact you. Don't contact me. As selfish. You know, I can see through it. It's just very selfish. And eventually when I went to Upper Darby, this guy picked me up to a meeting and he said, hey, there's a noon meeting tomorrow. If you can get there, that'd be awesome. We'll get you right back. I said, okay. And my home group became a 7109 Upper Darby group. And people at Alcoholics Anonymous showed up there. You know, I walked there the first time. It was a 45-minute to an hour walk. And, you know, I know what it's like to be new and be afraid of the bar. Like, I almost get sucked in, you know, when you're very new. And Upper Darby in Delaware County, we have the largest bars per capita and the largest Irish per capita in Delaware County. And there's all these bars. I mean, I remember the first time I was walking down there, I walked on the bar side just to see what's going on. And I'm walking, and all of a sudden I see this Irish guy just drunk, passed out in the middle of the street. It's noon. And I'm like, I walk over, I'm like, I got to make it to the group. And, you know, and that's what I did, man. I used to walk to meetings in the very beginning of my sobriety because I was willing. You know, when I hear people say nowadays that they can't make it to a meeting, I'm going to watch what I say, but bull crap. You know what I mean? I used to walk an hour each way to go to meetings. And then, even when I had like a way to get somewhere, I would like protest the bus company and I'd still walk anyways. And, you know, that's what I did. I walked to the meeting and I walked back. And I only had I think a 3 or 4 hour curfew. Yeah, it was a 3 hour curfew that I was allowed out, like a little sign out time. And so eventually people at AA saw me and they said, hey, you want to ride back? And so that cut my time down. So now I had more time to play pinochle with the old timers and talk about Alcoholics Anonymous. And I remember sitting there and they would talk about the big book and they talk about the steps and all kinds of stuff, you know, and I would just listen. You know what I mean? I know what it's like to be new and listen. I used to watch the people and I would watch them and they'd watch what they do. And, you know, I was just in awe. You know, all these different characters. We had so many nicknames in my group. You know, different people, you know. And it was awesome. You know, eventually they started giving me rides there and back. And eventually they said, hey, do you want to make the coffee? And this was like my biggest shot. You know, it was like, finally, this is my one opportunity. Don't blow it. You know, it's like, put me in the game, coach. And I get there early. And I kid you not, I never made coffee before. And I filled it all the way to the top. And like, that's what we're supposed to do. And this isn't one of those, like what you have there. It's like that times four. And I fill it all the way to the top. And this guy drinks, and he goes, wah! And he spits it out. And he's like, what is this? And this other guy goes, shut up. We didn't come here for the coffee. And I'm like, and so basically I lost my coffee privileges that fast. But, you know, at the time the guy sponsored me. He was like, hey, man, what we're going to do is we're going to clean ashtrays. We smoked at my group. So I started cleaning ashtrays, man. And, you know, all the stuff about Alcoholics Anonymous, I wanted in. You know, I bought into all of it. They said, hey, man, we go on 12-step calls. And when I was downstairs in the clubhouse, we played Pinochle, and they had these two phones. One is for the clubhouse, and the clubhouse wasn't part of AA, but it was all sober people that went there. And the other phone was Alcoholics Anonymous. And when that phone call meant everyone, when that phone call rang, everyone dropped what they were doing, because that meant that someone needed help. And I remember the first time that phone call rang, and I wasn't there. My sponsor would happen to be downstairs during this meeting at noon, and was talking to another guy, and the phone call rang, and he came. Comes upstairs and he goes, let's go. And I said, and the meeting's going on. He said, no, let's go. And he drove me, 90 days sober, and he drove me to this guy who just lost his wife and his kid in a car accident. And the guy wanted to drink at 30 years sober. And I said to him the whole entire way, I said, there's no way I can help this guy. And he said, tell me how you got 90 days and how you're still staying sober. And I said, really? And I remember we went to this guy, and that's my first 12-step call. Of many, you know, I don't get to go home like I used to, because down here everyone comes from treatment. But when I got sober, man, we used to go home all the time. I used to love them, man. I've walked into people throwing plates and dishes. I walked into people like go outside. I had dinner with this one kid, his whole entire family, grandma down to grandson to the dog and cat at the dinner table, and I'm just eating spaghetti like, is this real? You know, and it's just because they called it Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and we showed up, and man, I. That stuff saved my life. You know, it truly did. My first year, I had been on so many 12-step calls, and I had cleaned so many ashtrays and vacuumed so many floors that, you know, I look forward to it. You know, this is my home group. I don't know if I mentioned that, and I got to vacuum the floor here. And all I wanted to do was just do this, like, the best job possible. And then I think it was Jay's like, hey, man, we got to leave. They're kicking us out. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to wrap it up. But, you know, my first 2 years, man, so there's three sides of the triangle, unity, service, and recovery. And to me, it's like a house. You know what I mean? If you don't have all three, it's going to fall. And so I had the unity, I had the service. By 1 year sober, I had gotten a position as a general chair. It was a general chair position, and I found chair people for the group, for the 1:30 Sunday meeting at my home group. And I was just going to meetings, man, you know, and I had nothing going on for me, you know what I mean? And around that same exact time, I guess I got to talk how it was also. You know, I was on food stamps, all kinds of government assistance and everything like that, and they paid my electric bill, everything like that. I had nothing, man. I remember the first time I had friends over at my house, and they came over, and I wanted to have people over. I was so proud to have people over, and I had cardboard boxes, and that's what I used as furniture to put my my plates on. I used to eat, and I used to eat Hot Pockets that were buy one, get one. So I filled up my freezer with Hot Pockets, and then I used to have friends over. I said, hey, you want a Hot Pocket? And they'd open the freezer, and everything would fall out. And, you know, and that was my first year, man, and you know, I was proud of that. My friends would come over, and they'd play cards on top of my cardboard boxes, and my one little poker table that was like looked like someone throwing it out, and they'd bring soda over, and that's how I lived, man. And it was awesome, man. It really was, and I had a lot of good friends that were there for me. And around the same time, I was getting ready. I wanted to go to this conference. I remember this roundup was going on, Cape May Roundup, and I said, oh my God, I want to go to Cape May Roundup. I had 9 months sober, and I had no money. I was working at this one job, and it just barely got me by, just barely. And My friends, they sponsored me to go on this trip, you know. And I remember my buddy Bob, one of my best friends, he said, hey, man, we all put in $20 and we're sponsoring you to go. And I was like, wow, there's no way I can ever pay this. And he said, hey, man, eventually you're gonna sponsor someone else. And eventually, if you want, you can just pay me back the money. And I remember I said, I don't want to ever pay back the money. I want to take someone else and do what someone did for me. And I've been able to do that. And it's amazing. It really is. And people bought me meals in my first year. My friend Nikki, she said, hey, come out to dine with us. And I said, I don't have any money. And I'm just going to go home and watch Scarface for the 100th time. And she said, come on out. I'll buy you a meal. And I said, there's no way I'll be able to buy someone a meal. You know, I've done that. You know, people from Alcoholics Anonymous showed up, and I try to show up as well. That's why I'm here tonight. You know, it's an honor and a privilege to be here. And same time, there was another conference. I found a better job, and I was making good money, and my boss was like, hey, look, dude, we're going to this conference. And, dude, I was about to turn 21, and I was like, do I stay? Do I go? Which, I don't know what's going on. And I decided to go to Founders Day for my 21st birthday. I turned 21 in Akron, Ohio, with 10,000 people. And I remember being there, and I'm like, wow, this is where I need to be. And I remember all my friends were like, we had rented this van, and we drove all the way from Pennsylvania, Philadelphia to Akron, Ohio, and we just showed up, and it was amazing. All of us are still sober today. And it's truly incredible. You know, I'm still friends with a lot of these people. We've all gone our separate ways, but we still stay in touch. And we say, hey, remember the Akron, I think it was Akron 7? Remember the Akron 7? We're like, yeah. And it was a good time. And, you know, the next year, my 1 to 2 year, I really can't tell you what happened. You know, I didn't do any work, you know, on myself at all. I just existed in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and I sit back and think, like, what kind of message did I have? I had more of a mess than a message, you know, at 1 to 2 years sober, to be honest with you. And at 2 years sober, this convention, which has happened in this year, San Antonio World Convention was coming up. Atlanta's coming up this year. If you can go, please do. And San Antonio was coming up. And I said, I'm 2 years sober, and I'm at the convention. I want to kill myself because I haven't worked the steps. And something's got to change. And my sponsor said, are you ready to do your four-step? I said, yeah. And I sat back, and I said, have you ever been to San Antonio? They built it like Little Italy, where it's like a river walk. And I sat back, and I put on the song I'm Not Afraid by Eminem. And I did my four-step. And that's the honest truth. And it just kept looping and looping and looping. And, you know, I wrote it out. Next morning, my sponsor said, you ready to do your fifth step? I said, yeah. And, you know, I got stuck on my sixth step. And I thanked that man. He took me as far as he could, you know. And but I had the fire and the drive to do the steps. When I got back to Philadelphia the next week, I asked the guy who I used to insult, berate, and make fun of because he talked about the big book nonstop. And I said, I need help. You know, I'm 2 years sober, and I need to do the steps or else I'm going to die. And, you know, alcoholism is kind of baffling and powerful. It truly is. And that man took me through the steps within 1 week. And I remember he used to always, like, tell me, like, if you don't do this, you're going to drink again. And I did not want to drink again. And I remember the first time he was like, you gotta do your fifth step. And I'm like, cool. I wrote my fourth step down at the beach in Fort Myers. I'd flown back down here to visit my family. I had a better job at the time also. And, you know, I visited my family in Fort Myers, and I ran into a bunch of people that, you know, were on fire and enthusiastic about the big book. And I was like, I want to live in Florida. I remember when I was down in Fort Myers, I was like, I want to live down here. And flew back and did my fifth step, and then it came the time to do amends, and I was getting ready actually to fly back again to Florida because I was like so in love with the area, and I was coming down here for Philly spring training camp, and my sponsor said, you gotta make your amends, and I said, I don't know if I can do that, man. And he said, well, then you're gonna drink again, and I'll be here for you when you get back. And you know, this sponsor of mine, Chris, he'd always tell me, he said, I'm not afraid to step on your toes because I'd rather step on your toes than step on your grave. And that's the honest truth, man. I've had a lot of people that have hurt my feelings in here because they love me enough to do it, and they actually love me enough to tell me. And I'm grateful for that. And he was one of those people. He was an ex-MMA fighter, and he used to run all over West Philly. He used to be a big pusher. And, you know, he saved my life, really did. And so I made my amends, and I get ready to make my amends to my dad. And he called me, and he said, have you made it yet? And I'm like, no, what's going to happen? He said, shut up. And I was like, all right. And he said, you're going to do it right now. I don't care where you want, how you wanted to do it. Because I wanted to catch a fly ball, and I wanted to give it to my dad. And I wanted to be like, hey, I'm sorry. You know? Yeah, and it happened in a Dunedin CVS parking lot, I think. And I told my dad, I said, hey, can we sit here for a minute? And he said, what's going on? And I said, part of the process of Alcoholics Anonymous is that I make amends. And just laid out where I was wrong, you know, as laid out in the big book and as laid out in my for my fourth step. And I just laid out where I was selfish and considered dishonest. And what I wasn't ready for was my dad started making amends to me. And I was like, well, I don't know, do I stop him to let him go? Do I say, hey, this is my thing, you know? But my mind said, you know, he needs to be free of this all. So see, when I was younger, my dad was in school. And I didn't see my dad when I used to come home he was doing his bachelor's, master's program. And so I didn't see him a lot. I'd come home, it'd just be me and my mom. I was in kids' care after school. And, you know, working parents. And I let him go. I let him say what he had to say. And, you know, it was truly an amazing experience. And, you know, when I came back, he said, he'd always tell me there's more work that needs to be done. Because I'd always want to, like, rest on my laurels and be like, well, I did one thing, let me stop. And he'd be like, no, There is more work that needs to be done. You know, you need to carry this message. And dude, he used to have me doing stuff that like amazed me still. He's like, you know, let's try calling hospitals. Let's try calling detox. He's like, see if we can bring these meetings in. And he was on fire for recovery. You know, his goal was actually to sponsor more people than Bill Wilson. That's what he used to tell me. He said, my goal is to sponsor more people than Bill Wilson. I'm like, wow, good luck, you know. And that's what we would do, man. I went out there, and he said, you have to sponsor someone. And I was like, I don't know if I can do that, man. That is a lot to chew. And he said, well, good luck for you when you drink again. I'll be here for you when you get back. And I said, okay, I guess I got to sponsor someone. So I was at my home group, and a lot of people that weren't involved in the steps, they started thinking that I was acting better than them, when really all I was on fire was for the message and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I showed up at this group, and full room, and this guy shared. He was homeless, and he was living at 63rd and Market, which is where a homeless shelter's at. And they have this program where it gets below a certain temperature. I think they have it down here as well. Apparently, Florida gets cold. And and they take in the homeless in the homeless shelters, and they provide the people with a place to stay because it's so cold that they'll freeze. And this guy shared that that's what happened to him. He was a construction worker, and he drank again, and his boss is like, dude, just stay in Philadelphia. Don't even bother coming back to New York. And so this guy was sharing about that, and I said, you know, primary purpose, this is the guy. In the middle, as soon as he's sharing, I'm like, this is who I'm helping, you know? And the whole room cleared out, and it was just me and him. And I said to him, hey, man, I'm James, and would you like to read the big book? You know, I didn't know what to do, so I just read, you know? And what I'd highlighted my sponsor's big book because he let me borrow his and take it home. And I'd highlighted, we highlighted, and we just started reading. And 4 hours later, I had this man on his four-step. And, you know, I'd taken this man to my house and, you know, just shown up. You know what the people did for me? They showed up. And, I don't know whatever happened to that man. He was supposed to hear me speak the next day, and he called me and said, hey, man, I'm in New York. Thank you. You know, I don't remember his name. But I do know that at that moment, I realized that I felt a part of, you know, and I realized that I wanted to sponsor people more, and I wanted to get back to AA. And so that's what I did, man. I, two years sober, running around, sponsored a bunch of people, you know, and you know, it's almost like a catch-22, you know what I mean? I got so carried away with the sponsorship and the speaking everywhere that a lot of areas of my life slacked. You know, and I got to talk about it. You know, I can't sit up here and not talk about it. And, you know, I put up an AA face that I gained so much when really I didn't gain. I it was a facade, you know. I was giving back. I was helping people, but it was all in for the wrong. I was in it for ego and James, you know, and still being selfish even through service. It's crazy to even think about that. But I wanted people to know that I was speaking. I wanted people to know that I was sponsoring that guy. And, It's a scary place, man. It's a scary place when a guy, a friend of yours, will try to come up to you and you say, I got this, man. You don't know, you know. All I got to do is sponsor someone and speak at this group. I've spoken at conferences and spoken different states, and I'm like, wow, look at me, you know. Not look at what God in AA has done for me. And I remember a guy on Facebook hit me up and said, what's going on with your life? And I told him all this stuff and speaking here in this state, that state. And he said, what are you doing? I'm not doing. I don't work. And I don't do anything, and I speak everywhere. That's what I do. And he was like, it doesn't sound like you're living too much of a good life. And I'm like, you don't know. And almost 3 years sober, I wanted to move down to Florida. I prayed and meditated on it for about a year. I worked meaningless jobs, and you know, I started going back to old behaviors, you know, I started sleeping with new girls, and then I took it even further, and then I started actually sleeping with girls that were getting high, and that's the stuff I don't want to talk about, you know. I my last day in Philadelphia before I moved to Florida, I was seeing this girl, and, you know, she was actively doing heroin, you know, and it's crazy, man, it really is, and my ego can block it out, and you know, until I'm sitting there crying, wanting to kill myself, not wanting to drink. I never think about wanting to drink. You know, I always think about, like, I go to suicidal tendencies. And, you know, just didn't know what to do, you know. And my last day, I went to return this stuff to her. And I was just like, please, this has to stop. And I was sitting in my car, and I saw these two SUVs roll up from each direction on a one-way street, and these dudes hopped out with ski masks, and I said, I guess this is how I go out. And luckily I saw their badges, so they were cops, and I was like, thank God. And because I was like, if they're not cops, I'm dead. And they were jump out boys, what we call them. And they came and they thought I was selling drugs. And I was just sitting there waiting for her to get out of the bar so I could return her air mattress. And that was my last day before I went down to D.C. To catch the auto train to come down here. You know, I got to tell you what it's like, you know. I got to tell you how ego blocks me off from God. I got to tell you about how I lie to people that are closest to me because I don't want them to know what's going on. And, you know, it was rough, man. I came back, I told my friends, between my legs, and I was coming down here. And that's how I came down to Florida, man. And I came down to Florida after doing dirty deeds and not done dirt cheap, you know, AC/DC. And that's weird. And so I come down here, and, you know, I pretty much just continue the same behaviors. And, you know, it's hard to tell someone with time that thinks they know it. And really, the more I think about it, the longer I'm in this program, the less I know. I'm a baby, man. 6 years sober is what I have right now. Currently, I celebrate in June. And, you know, I don't know crap, man. I really don't. At 4 years sober, I was doing the same thing. Just existed in AA, man. I pretty much just filled up a seat. You know, I didn't get involved. People told me to get involved. I told them, you don't tell me anything. And I was a taker from AA. And but I did move down here with some goals in mind. I wanted to be close to my family. I wanted to get a job in my career field. And I wanted to go to school for my career. And go figure, I wanted to be a cop. And come down here and got involved in my family's life and did more damage sober than I did out there, you know. Acting a fool, acting selfish, inconsiderate, all that, you know? And basically, my dad thought I was drinking again. You know, that's how I was living. And that's horrible, man. It really is. And decided I was going to move to Tampa. I was living in Fort Myers for a few months. Decided I was going to move to Tampa. And I was with the Fort Myers guys when they were bidding for Ficky Pa. And then they got Ficky Pa. And that was awesome, man, because I was friends with a lot of them. And I was excited about that. And you know, I moved to Tampa, and, you know, Tampa was rough, man. I was doing the same exact thing here, you know. Thank you. Thank you. I got two guys. We're going to look cool. And I moved to Tampa, and living dirty still, man. If you don't change your sobriety date will change. You know, I'm going to say that right now. And I had to change, man. And I had this moment about 2 years ago now. And did the same thing over again, and I'm just crying. I literally felt like I was crying more tears than I was coming out of the shower. I was crying in the shower. And I got down on my knees and said, God, I trust in you, and I don't want to ever feel like this again. And, you know, I ever since that moment, I've redirected my primary purpose back to helping and not hurting. And, you know, I've had to face a lot of my actions, you know. Bless you. And, you know, got back involved in the program. I started sponsoring others, started doing really good in school, and got a job in my career field. I was in a meeting, and I met this guy, and we were laughing in the meeting. You know, I'm always finding people next to me, and we're laughing, and we're just, laughing at the speaker and whatnot. And this guy goes, hey, man, you want a job? And I'm like, what do you do? And he said, I work in corrections. I said, really? You work in corrections? Cool. Sign me up. And decided I was going to pursue my career in corrections. I was already in school for criminal justice, and it kind of makes sense. And, you know, I thought this program was more about helping, I felt like I was kind of lied to, but I was able to try to carry the message as best I could. You know, it was a women's correction unit with a partial program, 165 women with 44 non-secure. And it was awesome, man. You know, I had some amazing experiences. I've seen women be reunited with their kids after 6 years of not seeing them. I'm crying just as much as the women as the five-year-old brings up the roses to their mom. And I said, that's why I'm here, you know, to see stuff like that. You know, I've been able to tell people, and I broke my anonymity one time. This lady, she was telling me her story, and I'm like, wow, you know, and why she went to prison. And I'm like, wow. you know, to fight for her daughter, to get her daughter back away from the situation. And I'm just crying. She said, I've been AA. I started AA in this prison system. And, you know, I just bring the pamphlets here. I helped start the program here, and we got the outside speakers. And I just can't wait to go back to Pennsylvania and carry the message. And she's telling me this, and I said, you'd be a fool if we don't tell you you're an AA. And I go, you know, I'm an AA too. And just that connection. She was getting ready to leave, and that's the only reason why I broke my AA. And there's only one time I did that. And, just had an amazing moment with an inmate, you know, and that's through God, you know, it truly is. And after being there 14 months, I knew it was time for me to leave. And it's funny how things work, man. I was calling my sponsors, Todd, and I was calling Todd, and, you know, he was telling me, man, if you've lasted here a year, it shows you can do something for a year that you don't like. And I'm like, yeah, it's true. And and he's like, you know, why don't you just leave? And my dad, my mom used to beg me on the phone, please leave your job, because it was causing so much stress. It was a lot of stress. And I was going to school. If anyone knew me then, I used to sleep 2 hours a day. And I would go to school after work, and I'd get a two-hour nap, and then I'd go back to work. And it was insane. I wasn't sleeping at all, and I was going crazy. And I remember staring at a wall, and I could not put together a thought. And I said, I'm going crazy. I'm literally going crazy. And I'm in math class, and I'm like, nothing makes sense. And I'm like, I got to do something about this. And at the same time, I wanted to be successful. You know, I wanted to. I wanted to be like, look at me, I have a house. I was getting ready to buy a house. And I wanted to be like, look at me, I'm buying a house now. And one more thing that shows me that I've got it. You know, and I don't believe that's the case. You know, my outside stuff shouldn't reflect on my outside stuff shouldn't have to be more important than my inside stuff, you know. And you know, I was on the phone with a banker in Orlando, and he was telling me what I was pre-approved for, and I was like, wow, that's a lot of money. And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, wow. He said to me, I need you to stay there for 3 to 6 more months before closing. And he said, I talked to your dad beforehand, and I'm going to talk to you off the cuff. And he said, look, man, I don't know if you're going to be here 3 to 6 more months. And that's kind of crazy for a banker to kind of talk. That's not a good sales pitch, you know. And I said, wow. And he's like, I was young once too. And my dad wanted me to stay at my job. And that's what it was. And he said, I was once young once too. And I did what was right for me. And, you know, sponsor was telling me that it's probably best. My mom was begging me. And God spoke through a guy that I'll probably never see again. And or never hear from again, I mean. And so I called my buddy Vito. And we prayed the night before. And crying on the phone, my buddy Vito, a good friend of mine up in Pennsylvania. And I went into work and sat in a meeting and gave him my typed up paper. And it's all new to me, man. Everything's new to me. You know, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous homeless, looking at a place that I managed to find that had electricity. It was a abandoned building. It had a stove, so I thought it was a come up. So here I am putting it 2 weeks in. I don't even know what this is. I thought after you put your 2 weeks in, you could leave, but you actually have to stay 2 weeks. And go figure. And I put it in, and they laughed at me. And then they got angry at me. And the first thing that came to mind was this Gandhi quote. You know, first they laugh at you, next they fight you, and then you win. And, you know, I walked through it with the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't retaliate. They talked so much trash on me. My bosses, who I thought I respected, you know, and were trying to just get something out of me. And I left, and the next week I attended something that truly changed my life, and I had to put a plug in for it, Men's Advance. And I went to Men's Advance and was free. I felt free. And at the same time, a couple weeks before that, I had signed up for the Honor Society at school because my grades were really good. And it's funny, man, fear drives my life at times. I got, for 3 semesters straight, I got invited to the National Honor Society because of my grades. And I was too afraid to join because I thought I'd get kicked out. And Todd said, what do you have to lose, man? And I said, $55. And he said, and so I joined. And I remember I was there. I had my phone off the whole entire weekend at Men's Advance. That was one of the things I wanted to do. I turned my phone off the whole entire weekend. And I remember when I was getting ready to leave, I turned my phone on, and Jack was getting ready to leave. They were going to take him to the airport. And I turned my phone on, I got an email. And, you know, it still chokes me up. I see this email, and it says, welcome to National Honor Society. We accept you. And I said to myself, wow, man, a homeless kid from Philadelphia made it, you know? That's crazy. And I was bawling my eyes out, and I hugged Jack, and I said, this is crazy, man. And he said, there's more to come, you know? And You know, when I got back, I attended a ceremony. My friend Blair was there. He's not here tonight, but he came with me and my mom. And, you know, the whole entire time I was sitting there, and I said, if only these people knew that I was homeless and I used to steal and rob from people, you know. There was people 15, 16 years old in there that somehow were in college, and here I am, 26 years old, and I'm like, wow, you know, this is amazing, Alcoholics Anonymous. And this past year, I've been driven into service. I'm still on fire for Men's Advance. If you're not, get back on fire, you know, because, you know, primary purpose, man. You know, all I want to help people, man. My friend John, I didn't mention this, but welcome. You know, I want to talk to you afterwards. You know, we need you. You know, you're the future. And, you know, man, the byproducts of sobriety, man. I left that job. I called some friends and decided to pursue a different career and was able to do that and was able to get something that I didn't think was possible. My friend told me, put your goals down in your wallet. And, dude, I'm pulling more goals out of my wallet than I'm putting in, you know, and that's amazing, you know. And I passed the state license, and I got this, basically a job, you know. I'm my own contractor now, and it's amazing, you know. I don't say it to brag. I show it to what God and AA can do for someone, you know. And at the same time, I remember when I passed my exam, I passed it on my six-year anniversary, June 18th. And the same day, my dad called me, and you know, I was sitting down, and he called me, and he said, "Hey, you know, I want to say, I remember when you made amends to me, and the past is the past, and I want to say I forgive you." You know, see, I made that amends at 2 years sober, and I had thought that, hey, it was done. But at the same exact time, when between 2 and 6 years sober, I would come home, I'd eat food, and I'd route. You know, I wouldn't do anything. But this past year, you know, I sat at the house meetings, and I went and talked to Jack and Men's Advance, and he said, show up for your family's life. And so I've been there for every single holiday. I've taken the trash out. I've helped cook. I've helped clean up. And I showed up for my family. And they see that. They see Alcoholics Anonymous at work, and they see that someone doesn't show up and eat food and then come return the car on empty, you know? And that's what I used to do. I say, I'm sober, though. You know, taker, selfish, you know? And, that's what I did, man. I showed up for my family, and you know, was able to give my nephews Christmas gifts, my parents Christmas gifts, and just awesome stuff, man. And that's the byproducts and rewards of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And I get my dad on the phone, basically saying he accepts my amends 4 years later. See, I thought I was done, man. You know, and I forgot the number one thing. There's more work to be done. You know, we suit up and we show up, and you know it. It's an honor and privilege to be here tonight, and I have a lot of friends that that couldn't make it here, you know, because they sat in these rooms and they didn't get involved, you know. And I need to talk about this, you know. If you're not doing the work, you need to get involved, you know. I'm not sitting here on a pedestal preaching, you know. What I'm saying is, you know, I needed people to tell me, you know, and basically people step on my toes. I have a lot of good friends right now that aren't afraid to tell me how it is, and I need that, man. I constantly need that drive. I have people that push me in business, and the same thing, I have people in AA that push me in AA. And please stay. We need you. Thanks, guys. And, you know, getting my family back has been the greatest thing of this year. You know, I talked to my mom. I completely forgot to say. I usually, every time I speak, I call my parents and I ask them what they want me to say. And my mom wanted to say that she's read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I bought her a big book and I gave it to her. And apparently, she's just one of those people, like, she just, like, reads it. And she knows a bit more about me. She's like, hey, you know this one story, this and that, in the back? And she's talking about the story Grounded in the back of the big book. Oh, yeah, the plane. That wasn't like the movie Denzel Washington. And I'm like, geez, man. That's awesome, man. So my mom's read the big book. And, you know, I got an amazing relationship with my parents, you know, it's truly a gift. I've been able to sponsor people. It's truly been a miracle. And I've had amazing amends stories. And like I said, man, if you don't have a sponsor here, please get one. If you haven't done the steps yet, please do. You know, we need you to stay, man. There's a lot of people in here I look up to. And, you know, I want the doors of AA to be here when my friends come here, and I want the work to still be done, you know, and that's why I'm here, man. I mean, I sit back and I can't even believe what's going to happen in the next year, you know. This past year has truly been amazing, you know, it really has, you know. And I also got to say, I went to Fikipa this weekend, and I'm proud to announce that Tampa's bringing Fikipa back. And I got back to my hotel, my little house I rented out there, and I started crying, man. I said, because a lot of new people are going to get help from this. There are a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous in the Tampa Bay area that don't know that, you know, young people are getting sober and they're having fun in sobriety and it's not over. You know, and this past weekend I was able to sit with guys and talk to them about Alcoholics Anonymous. I sat with a guy that had 30 days and lived in Pasco County, and it was very hard to understand him because he was very redneck. And I hung out with him and I just talked to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and he said, so it's not over yet? I said, no, man, it's just beginning, man. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous, your first page of your book is just getting written in this program, you know, and you have so much to live for. And we all do. You know, I do as well. You know, I told a story last time I spoke here, and if you didn't tell, I'm going to tell it again, you know, and it's the Chinese bamboo tree. The Chinese bamboo tree, you know, it takes 5 years to grow. The whole entire time within this 5 years, it requires you to fertilize it and water it every single day. Now, it doesn't show you that it's growing until 5 years. So the whole entire time, it's like if you have a neighbor and you see him watering, what's that? The Chinese bamboo tree. And you're like, well, hey, man, you've been watering it for a year. I don't see anything. The whole entire time you are watering this Chinese bamboo tree, it is actually growing its roots underground. So you don't see what's going on. What you see is this thing in the ground. You say, it's not growing, man. And after 5 years, they grow up to 55 feet tall within 6 weeks. 6 weeks. And so, basically, the whole entire time, it's like Alcoholics Anonymous, man. We come in here and we grow our roots, you know what I mean? And we plant ourselves in service in this aspect of life. We get a home group, we get a sponsor, sponsees, and we plant ourselves in service. And this doesn't have to take 5 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. This takes as long as you want it to take. But for me, it took some time. And, you know, and then it just shoots up and just starts growing. And that's how I feel this now, man. They told me when I come in, the days become weeks, the weeks become months, and the months become years, and the years become multiple years. And I can say that's absolutely true. You know, my life has flown by. You know what I mean? Because I continue to do the work now. And I've been on fire for this, man. I've been on fire for recovery the past, you know, 2 years since I still pray to God in the shower and I say, God, I still trust in you. Because I know He's my creator, man. He's the principal, I'm the agent, you know? And you know what I mean? If you haven't started planting your roots, please do. You know what I mean? And watch your life grow amongst you. You know, they say in the program, trust God, clean house, and help others. You know, back in the day, I didn't trust anyone. I robbed houses and I hurt others. You know, and I'm here to tell you, man, I'm a changed person. You know, please get involved and please stick and stay afterwards. Come to the hang if you're new. Come to the hang. You know, thanks for letting me share.